Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you on this Thursday morning. And as we do every Thursday morning at 8 o'clock, we head to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in our friend Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. Charles, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, gents. How you doing this morning?
Doing awesome, man. Appreciate you taking time to be with us. So, Charles, Russell Wilson signs with the Giants on a one-year deal. You got Jameis Winston, who also signed in New York over the weekend. And then there's still Cam Ward and the potential to move up to number one overall that could be out there as well. So where do you come down on what the Giants have done at quarterback and what that either means or maybe doesn't mean in terms of their interest at moving up to number one to go try and grab Cam Ward?
Yeah, well, I see everybody pulling the plug on the Giants. They're like, oh, this is, you know, they got, you know, Jameis is their number two and Russell Wilson's their number one, so they're out of the quarterback market. I don't agree with that at all. You know, first off, a number of teams played three quarterbacks in the 2024 season. So it's for teams to prepare to have players, especially players with experience at all three quarterback positions, or at least talent at one, two, and three on their quarterback depth chart, I don't think is unusual, particularly for a giant staff that is like their jobs riding on the line in 2025. So you don't want to be caught shorthanded in any way, shape, or form at the quarterback position in 2025. And, you know, so when they signed Russ, I mean, first off, you're talking about an incentive-laden deal. If you just want to look at the base numbers for what Jameis, they're on the hook for with Jameis and Russ next year, you're basically talking about $14.5 million. And then when you talk about NFL rookie salaries, let's say at the number one overall pick or at the number three overall pick in year one of their deals, that's going to range between about $7.3 and $7.8 million. So let's say the Giants trade up to one, select a quarterback, Cam Ward, or they stay at three, select a quarterback, which would probably be Shedeur Sanders at three. Your total outlay at quarterback in 2025 would be about $21 million. Total bargain for a starting quarterback in the NFL for a single season, sub the median midline for what starting quarterbacks make. So that's really the way you have to look at it. Just because there are bodies there, you really have to add the salaries. And to most anyone across the league that looked at it, they're looking at it saying, yeah, Russ, that's not really a true starting quarterback number, even with incentives added into it, where maybe he can push it to, you know, around $17, $18 million based on playing time. And the Jameis one too, I think raised some flags. People looked at that deal and said, you know, that's not number two money. That's kind of number three money. It doesn't take the Giants out of this scenario at all. And what I think is really interesting is when you went back, and I addressed this when I wrote about Cam Ward's pro day a few weeks ago, if you talk to people in Cam Ward's circle, they felt pretty convinced that the Giants were going to make a run at the number one pick in the draft, that there was going to be, if not a trade that happened where the Giants moved up to one, there was going to be a pretty significant effort that took place. And the feel I got was, you know, pay attention to the NFL owners meetings, which obviously is coming up in the next week. That's where if there's traction on a trade, it's really going to hit the ground in the next week or so. So I didn't get the sense at all in any way, shape, or form that the Giants are out of potentially trading up, which would be, I don't see the Giants moving from 3-1 for anything less than three first round picks or something of that nature, something of that value when you add up all the assets. And I don't see, you know, if they stay put, I don't see them being out of the market for a quarterback at number three as well. And, you know, we could talk about this. I got to tell you, the Browns, it's weird stuff going on with the Browns at two. Like, just a weird, you can feel it. You can feel something weird is going on with Cleveland at two.
Well, first of all, three first-round picks sounds insane to me. I mean, like, I don't think there's any way they're doing that. So, I mean, I hear everything you're saying about the financial investment. I still find it weird just because, like, you know, you kind of have it set up to go Russ, and then you got Jameis as your backup, and it seems like a settle on that as a lineup, you know. But
I agree with you. I think it's more, to me, more likely than not that you stay put at three. And if let's say they like Shador, if Shador's three, they're at three, they look at that very closely. That it's not necessarily just sticking with the two quarterbacks that they have. And here's the thing too, we don't know, and this is really key, what ownership's role is in this. Don't think that whatever happens is very John Mara inspired, particularly after everything that went on with Saquon last offseason. I don't think there's any question that Mara wants the quarterback situation resolved. Part of the thorn that I think really stuck in his side as an owner was he felt like the equation that weighed itself out and ended up with Saquon off the team was that Daniel Jones was supposed to be this resolution at the quarterback position. So now he's staring at Saquon in Philadelphia and he's saying, well, not only did I lose a guy that I really thought should have been a giant that our fan base loved and that I personally enjoyed watching play, but we also still never resolved the quarterback spot. So there's no way that ownership's not playing a role in this. So, you know, I think you have to factor that into it as well. As far as the three first round pick price tag, I think part of that to me is the fact that, and I'll be honest, I think it's fairly speculative, but when you talk to people around the league, like, hey, what's it going to take to get up to one? I think part of it is that Cam Ward, I mean, opinions vary, but I think people think that Cam Ward has showcased a little bit better than maybe what was initially thought. And I told you before on the show, I've always said this idea that it was Cam and Shador and then a gap between the rest of the quarterbacks was not accurate. It was Cam, a gap, then Shador, then another gap, and then the rest of the quarterbacks. But I do think that that's played out in the process. And when I talked to people who were at the pro day for Cam Ward, you know, they said, look, it's the consensus opinion I got was it's typical, you know, look, it's a pro day. Nobody wants to get over their skis on this whole thing, but that he checked all the boxes. I think there were quite a, you know, I talked to some guys that were really happy with just sort of his demeanor. I never really talked to him as a person and really liked what they walked away with after interacting with him a bit personally in a less, you know, sit down environment. And then, you know, when he worked out on the field, they were just very impressed with his ability to quickly get the ball out, especially on short to intermediate stuff. That he's like, one guy said to me, it reminds me of Rodgers a little bit, like his ability to flick his wrist and get a pass off inside 15 yards with no time. Like if you got to get it out, this guy can get it out. And obviously with the arm strength, that's decent. And as one guy said to me, you know, he said, you know, he's a little doughy. And he said, but it's not a bad thing. He said, I think his fitness. And he said, it happens with quarterbacks. He's going to get stronger on the NFL level. And he said, and in a way that his arm will get stronger as his overall fitness level gets better. It happens with quarterbacks. And he said, you know, it's good that he's already got a strong arm, but he thinks it could even get better at the next level.
That's very interesting. So the Browns are, what the heck are they doing? Is it like, I mean, is it still possible to get Cousins? Like, what are they? They're just throwing out all kinds of misinformation.
So here, I'll give you, this is so interesting to me. So yesterday, somebody in the Browns media market comes out and says a Dak Prescott trade is in the works, right? They're negotiating with the Cowboys about trading for Dak Prescott. On his face, immediately, the second I saw it, I'm like, this is just stupid. Like, this is stupidity. What are we doing here? Like, this is ridiculous. This is crazy. This is just absolutely ludicrous. So I ignore it, right? But as time goes on, you start to get text messages, and people are like, is this real? Like, what's going on? And you're like, and I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, we have to address this? Like, seriously? So Jane Slater from NFL Network had come out on the Cowboys' end. She's like, this isn't true, right? And I'm paraphrasing what Jane said, but she just, you know, throws, and it's funny, she posted a meme of, or a gif of somebody throwing cold water. And so I'm like, all right, well, I'll let me just finish this off so we can be done with this and I don't have to get more text messages about this. So I reach out to people who would know on the Browns end. And it took me longer than I thought to get, you know, and you know, I'm talking about going to Dak's camp, going to the Browns end of it. I'm like, okay, it'll be easy to finish this off. It took longer than I thought. And I started to get nervous because I'm like, is this real? Like, is there some traction here? Of course there wasn't. You know, then it all kind of comes in an avalanche where it's a multitude of people who are like, this is totally stupid. Don't waste any time with this. This is, I don't know who said this, but it's a joke. So I tweet out, you know, don't want to have to deal with this or even really put any time or effort into it. But here, look, from Brown's perspective, there's no Dak talks. There's no trade. This is totally ridiculous. But as the day played on and you start to talk to different people, I mean, what I gathered is the Browns are not displeased with quarterback ambiguity right now. I think they kind of like that there's BS out there in the system regarding them and the quarterbacks, which means they're up to something. There's something going on with the Browns. And I reached out to other people that, particularly people that are tied into the quarterback market, and I'm like, explain this to me. Like, what's going on there? Because they don't have a starting quarterback right now. And it's not necessarily easy to just plug a starting quarterback in there unless they're taking Shador at 2, because I think the Titans take Cam Ward at 1. If they're or the Giants trade up and take Cam Ward at 1, it's hard for me to envision them taking Shador at 2 or even spending the capital, to move up from 2 to 1. And there's just no answers out there in the system. I'm talking when you talk to agents, when you talk to teams, everybody that has sort of skin in the game when it comes to the quarterbacks does not have a great idea of how exactly the Browns are going to resolve their starting quarterback situation. Now, the Falcons held on to Kirk Cousins. I have felt all along that, hey, they're going to at some point, want to deal Kirk. Kirk has a no trade in his contract. I know that Kirk does not want to go anywhere until after the draft because he doesn't want to get into a Michael Penix situation again where he would go somewhere before the draft and then they draft a quarterback. But here's the thing about the Falcons. When you talk to people inside the Falcons franchise, it does not sound like they're going to get rid of Kirk. It sounds like the owner, Arthur Blank, is sitting there and he is convinced, I'm just going to hang on to this. I already paid the money. It's crazy. Yeah, $27.5 million in 2025. It sounds insane, but I'm hard-headed. We have our starting quarterback. I've already paid it. I'm not going to pay to make somebody else's team better. We'll just hang on to him unless we get some kind of overwhelming offer. So I think there's a very good chance Kirk stays in Atlanta as a backup. It's an insane situation. We talk about it. It'll be one of the biggest stories in training camp. But to me, that removes an element for the Browns when it comes to their quarterback spot. So I've told you guys before, I think Shador is the story of the draft. I think it's Shador and the Browns now. And I don't think they're necessarily tied together. I just think they're two entities where I don't know for sure where Shador Sanders is going to go in the NFL draft. And I don't know what the Cleveland Browns are going to do at number 2. And I don't think I'm alone.
So, Charles, we saw, like, basically the entire organization at Cam Ward's pro day for the Titans.
Yeah.
So I guess my question to you is this. Like, how much of an appetite do you think that there still is to trading the number 1 pick? And how much have the Titans, do you think, decided that Cam Ward's their guy? Like, they are locked in to Cam Ward.
I thought it was interesting that they sent the media contingent, the in-house media contingent. And I say that because in the past few years, when I felt like a team has been locked in on who their pick is going to be at number 1 overall, you see them send not only the motorcade of basically everybody in the organization from a front office and coaching standpoint, they also send a very healthy contingent from their inside media arm. And you know, I think that's because they know who they want. They're going to generate a lot of content, both leading up to the draft and after the draft with this individual player. And that was one of the things that raised my eyebrow with the Cam Ward workout, was that really they were the one team that really sent everybody. Like, if you had any vested interest in Cam Ward being the number 1 overall pick, you were in the building that day. And so, you know, I think that I think the way that Cam ultimately worked out, and then when you just talk to people around the league who are like, look, they're clearly out on Levis. There's no doubt. I think Will Levis, by the way, I think he will be available. I think if teams want to call the Titans, they will listen to any kind of trade offers on Will Levis going into the draft and during the draft. And I think it's sort of accepted across the league now that they're definitely locked on to Cam Ward with the top overall pick. Now, that said, again, I can't rule out that if things get crazy, if the Giants are like, we have to have Cam Ward and we're going to throw everything at this, or if somehow, some way, and we just don't see it right now, and it's sort of what the Browns are playing at, if the Browns try to move up from 2-1 to get Cam Ward, because again, if the Browns are smoke screening right now, who are you smoke screening from? The Giants, right? I mean, like, who are you really? Why do you care what anybody else thinks about whether or not you're going to take Shedeur Sanders at 2, unless you're sitting there looking at the Giants going, well, you know, actually we're the ones that are in on Cam Ward. I don't rule out that if somebody gets wild and really wants to throw everything at this pick just to get to 1, and I do think Cam separated himself enough that there is a belief that he's, you know, worth moving for if you feel like that's absolutely what you've got to have and you feel safe beyond 2025. I can't rule out that the Titans would entertain that. But it's become pretty accepted, I think, amongst other teams that the top pick is pretty much solidified. It's going to be Cam Ward. It's just who makes the selection.
Okay, so then kind of along with all of this, and someone asked this on our text line, you know, Jimmy Haslam is at, and they have a private workout with Cam.
Yeah.
Is this,
yep.
What does this mean? Please decipher. Continue to decipher the Browns for us, Charles.
Well, I think the quarterback position with the Browns is an ownership position. And I say that because the mess that they're in right now with Deshaun Watson was ownership driven. People around the league know it. I feel like I've known it for a while, but now you definitely get the sense that a multitude across the league, they don't pin that on Andrew Berry, the general manager, Kevin Stefanski. They know that when Deshaun Watson became someone who was on the radar, that Haslam basically took the controls and said, I'm going to get this done. That's why the finances, the fully guaranteed $240 million deal happened, was because of Jimmy Haslam. And, you know, so I think as much as people look at quarterbacks and they paint, hey, how does this guy fit Kevin Stefanski's system? What assets do they have to move? You don't hear a lot of people talking about Haslam, and they should be, because the hole and the problem created, I think internally, if everyone is being honest, including Jimmy Haslam, they know the problem was created by the owner. They know that Jimmy Haslam was the one who did the contract that I don't think was popular inside the organization. People wanted the ability to do a deal where they could, if they needed to move off of Deshaun Watson, just to backstop it, just in case. They wanted that to not be a fully guaranteed deal. That's not what it was going to take to get Deshaun Watson to the Browns, and Haslam made that decision. And so when you see Haslam on site, when you see him taking part in these evaluations, don't just presume that that's a nothing scenario. No, it's, I think, very much, if they were to, let's say, trade to go get a Cam Ward at 1, it's going to be Haslam driven. He's going to be the one saying, yeah, we can give up the assets. It's fine. You guys are safe. We have to find a way to get out of the Deshaun Watson era. And I have to be the one who green lights doing something aggressive and potentially crazy, at least from outside looking in, to move from 2-1. So I think more people, frankly, should be talking about the fact that Haslam's so very clearly involved in what the Browns are doing, and that they're so clearly trying to, they're very clearly not rushing out to knock down any ambiguity about what they might be doing.
Well, you're keeping the intrigue alive in this market.
Hey, this is, I love this. This is great.
Oh, yeah.
I'm telling you, I'm like, this is the way this is shaping up. I'm like, it's crazy to be this deep into it. And I thought that the day that Cam Ward had his pro day workout and you know, I'm talking to people that were boots on the ground, and I'm like, man, you can still tell people aren't entirely sure what's going to happen with this situation. And it's rare to get into, you know, approach late March and have so many individuals who typically count on having the first couple of picks locked in by, especially the owners meetings, having that understanding locked down, are still sitting there going, you know, we don't know. The Saints are sitting there going, what's going to happen with the quarterback? Because I think they would like to look and see if a quarterback drops. I think the Pittsburgh Steelers are extremely interested in knowing what's going to happen with the quarterback position, because they're waiting on Aaron Rodgers, and Aaron Rodgers is, I mean, I don't know, oddly waiting on the Vikings, and the Vikings aren't exactly completely closing the door on Aaron. They're, some of the stuff the Vikings are saying right now is a little weird and leads to additional speculation. So, yeah, it's this is really, really interesting the way that things are starting to line up.
So another, I guess, staying in this market, but a different topic, Charles. Robbie Boren let go by the Titans. Just,
yeah,
I don't know if there's any, you know, thought from you, first of all, on him at league-wide, if you can put in perspective,
definitely,
you know,
yeah,
the job he does, but also if there's any reaction to that league-wide, what do you think it says about the Titans?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a pretty close-knit community when you talk about, you know, heads of communications for teams, and particularly for individuals who have been with franchises for an extended period of time. It's rare for someone to last, you know, 15, 20, 25 years, almost 30 years with an organization. And you're talking about, you know, Robbie Boren in that respect. And, you know, I tweeted out that, you know, to me, it's surprising, because certainly that's never part of what I ever thought was an issue or a problem with the organization. And I guess the way I've always measured it, and you know, 2 decades plus of covering the league, I've had, you know, heads of communication, you know, heads of PR who I felt were monumentally just problematic, unfair, always, you know, trying to spin things, or who you just didn't, you know, you thought were, you know, just peddling BS, basically, if I, you know, to be blunt about it. And then you felt like, okay, there's people who are fair. You don't necessarily always agree with how they might, you know, approach how something's being covered by the media, or maybe the availability of certain individuals in the franchise, or just sort of how they act as a gatekeeper. But, you know, they're fair. You get some, you have some wins, you have some losses, and you just figure, okay, that's an honest broker that is the point person you deal with a franchise. That's Robbie. And so it's a little surprising, you know, to me, or very surprising when you see them part company with him, because it's again, not perceived. I look at it as, I live in Houston. There was a PR guy by the name of Kevin Cooper, and everybody who ever came through to deal with the Houston Texans looked at him as an asset, and looked at him as someone who was not there as a deterrent, was not necessarily there to do our jobs for us, but was there to go, okay, let's talk about, you know, whatever you're coming in, you know, into the fold as a media member, let's talk about how we can coexist in this space together in a way that is both good for the team and allows reporters to do their jobs. And to me, that's Robbie. So when that happened, you know, my text had really piled up late, and I piled up pretty considerably. I got to it a little bit late in terms of, I think it was like, you know, 12 hours after it happened. But there were multiple people in his position across the league who were like, wow, you know, like, what's going on? Like, that's crazy. And it's unfortunate. It really is. It's just unfortunate. But I will also say, I've been around long enough to see when regime change happens. I have seen, you know, new regimes come in and they just want a person who they feel like is aligned with how they want to put information out, who they feel like they trust internally just because they know that person. And that's ultimately what makes the difference. When I covered the Lions, They had had a very, very long, long time ahead of PR, and literally my first year in, one day I walked in and that individual was gone and there was a new individual. And I was like, you know, what just happened? And part of it was money. It was a cheaper, younger person, but it was also a person that I felt like Matt Millen, when he took over as a general manager of the Lions, frankly, he could, for lack of a better term, push this person around and dictate, here's how information is going to come out of our organization now. And that point person was like, okay, fine, cool. Didn't have any issue at all with trying to negotiate with the people who hold the keys in the franchise. When Kevin Cooper got let go with the Houston Texans, it was very clear. His biggest problem was that he actually tried to negotiate with the people who held the keys, with, you know, the coaching staff, with, and they didn't like that. That really bothered them. They were like, no, they wanted someone who just agreed whatever they wanted to go. That's how it was going to go. And that's why Kevin Cooper was out of a job. So it's a long diatribe there. It's just, it's one of those things where it's definitely someone who, you know, at least I personally felt, and you guys can, you know, add to this or kind of reflect on it however you want, but I felt like he was an asset. He wasn't a bad thing for that franchise. He was a very solid, good thing for that franchise. So, and that's an outsider's perspective, by the way. I'm not there every day. So,
no, you're right. You're dead on.
Yep, dead on, as usual. Charles Robinson joins us every Thursday morning at 8 o'clock. Charles, great stuff, man. Thanks for being with us, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right, sounds good. Have a good day, guys.
Yes, sir. Charles Robinson, our guest. We'll react to what Charles had to say there. Coming up next, take your thoughts, 615-737-1025. Robbie and Rex Row, 1025-1063, The Game.